as the Bush administration has failed to build an international consensus in support of U.S. military action, with European and Middle East allies, Japan, Russia, and China opposing unilateral U.S. military action, and whereas war should not be undertaken unilaterally by the United States or other parties, and whereas past military conflict in the region resulted in widespread environmental destruction, the effects of which have not yet been mitigated or understood, and whereas past military conflict in the region resulted in widespread damage to the civilian infrastructure of Iraq and widespread suffering and death of Iraqi civilians, and whereas the United States has been the primary force behind 12 years of non-military sanctions against Iraq that have resulted in the death of over 500,000 children under age 5 due to inadequate water, food, and medicine, according to UNICEF and other international relief organizations, and whereas humane international diplomatic efforts should be the preferred means to resolve international conflicts, and whereas war should be a last resort, and whereas Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution requires that Congress must debate and vote on whether to declare war in Iraq, and whereas the government of Iraq has agreed to unconditional return of international weapons inspectors to determine Iraq's compliance with U.N. Security Council resolutions concerning the development of weapons of mass destruction by Iraq, and whereas the ultimate security of the United States is dependent on creating the conditions of life for all nations, working together cooperatively, that will eliminate poverty, injustice, inequality, environmental degradation, and other factors that breed war and terrorism, and whereas the citizens of Santa Cruz and its local elected officials have the constitutional right to petition the national government on this matter of grave concern to our community as part of the national and international debate now underway, now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Santa Cruz 1 hereby reaffirms the articles of the United Nations Charter and the principles of international law on the peaceful resolution of disputes, and 2, hereby expresses our opposition to the U.S.'s continued and threatened violation of UN Charter and of international law by its unilateral preemptive military action against the nation of Iraq, and 3, hereby opposes continuing non-military sanctions, continuing U.S. military action against Iraq, and proposed escalated military action by the U.S. against Iraq, and 4, hereby urges the Bush administration and our representatives in Congress to work with and through the UN to obtain compliance by Iraq with UN Security Council resolutions concerning the development by Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, and to fully support the return of international weapons inspectors to Iraq for that purpose, and 4, hereby urges the Bush administration and our federal representatives to actively support UN diplomatic efforts to support and encourage democracy and respect for human rights in Iraq and all nations. 5, be it further resolved that no war against Iraq be undertaken at any time by the U.S. without the agreement of the United Nations Security Council under the UN Charter and without a full debate and vote in the United States Congress under Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. That's the proposition for the Santa Cruz City Council, and it's coming up for debate according to the agenda packet at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, September 24th, in 2 days, day after tomorrow. The resolution of the City Council of the City of Santa Cruz opposing U.S. military action against Iraq. Now, I actually support this, and I think it does, however, tend to show, as candidate Levitt has said, that the City Council is big on the symbolic stuff, and we're not talking about, I don't know, cutting off cooperation. I think there was a thing about a Navy ship 12 years ago about, you know, not extending the invitation to the military to be here and so forth. There's nothing substantive here. But I've been asking for this kind of resolution against the phony war on terrorism and the war in Afghanistan for months, and I couldn't even get Crone to introduce it. I mean, he just wasn't interested. So it's not quite clear whether it's I haven't got the votes, or I don't want to offend my liberal pals who might get nervous, or whatever the deal is. But I suppose I should be happy now that there is this resolution coming up. And I think it's good. I'm going to support it, and I think that it's going to probably get significant passage. There are those who don't support it, saying the Santa Cruz City Council should be turning this matter to local affairs and avoiding this kind of posturing. I certainly think it should turn to local affairs. I don't mind this kind of posturing, provided they deal with local affairs and provided they make some substantive actions on this issue as well. For those who have any comments, you're welcome to call in 427-3772. 427-FRSC is our phone line. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I think we have some stuff ready to play here. Talked a bit about Merry Monday, surf shop. Well, this is the kind of shenanigan we'll see happen.
Pacific and Cooper, the Downtown for All Merry Monday is about to get hopefully a little merrier, or certainly a little more didactic. And we have a cluster of hosts across the street at the warehouse. Yes, there's Officer Hilliard, it looks like. Is that Officer Hilliard? Could be Officer Hilliard. Julie Hendy and numerous other individuals. Well, I think shall I stand up and introduce you one more time before you speak before the crowd of seven here, I think?
Where's Steve?
So welcome to another edition of Merry Monday in Downtown for All. Food Not Bombs here is successfully served, and apparently the health department is satisfied with the quality of their food as the rest of us are. Lots of things are happening around the city and county, and I'm going to pass the flame here over to Thomas Levitt, who's a city council member, well, soon to be a city council member, a candidate now, a member in November, we hope. There is a strike going on in the county. I encourage everyone to support the county strikers, county workers. Perhaps Thomas will talk a little about that. Tomorrow there's a medical marijuana WAM distribution. I hope that it gets extended beyond WAM members to all people who need medical marijuana. That's going to be at 3:00 over at the City Hall for those who are WAM members and who are medical marijuana users. But without further ado, Thomas Levitt, City Council candidate. Yo!
Hello. I'm not going to say a lot. Of course, I support WAM, and I oppose the DEA's ridiculous busting of medical marijuana collectives when there's oodles of much higher priorities that our government could have. I support the county workers. What I want to talk about today is a little bit about the priorities of the progressive community in this city. It appears that there's quite an interesting litmus test for legitimacy or appropriateness for serving on the city council. And that involves a denunciation of a certain individual for reasons that are not tremendously clear. The progressive community in this city appears to be quite tied up over Mr. Norse's behavior and tactics and everything else, to the point that apparently they've decided that Robert and whatever they dislike about him is vastly more important than the fate of civil liberties, human rights, and homeless people in this city and county. And, you know, I just want to let everyone know that even though I may disagree with Robert on certain of his tactics, I'm not going to denounce him. I've been working with him for years. And the fact is that the rest of these progressives, if they don't have the stomach to deal with conflict, if they don't have the stomach to deal with Robert, what are they doing in politics, and where are they?
Exactly.
On the west side.
Where are they? They're not here. They're not at the city council. They're not anywhere. And I think that's just a shame. I think that the issues that we're dealing with transcend individual personalities. They transcend my personality. They transcend Robert's personality. They transcend Steve's personality. And they transcend anyone else's personality. People are being unjustly harassed. They're being deprived of basic human rights to sleep. They're being deprived of having any safe and legal place to sleep in this town. It's being made illegal for someone to live in this town if they don't have an official residence. The priorities of this community are screwed up. We're spending millions on police enforcement at the wrong end of the friggin' circle, and not enough on preventative care, on health care, on care for AIDS patients, on care for homeless people. In this county, we are sending people home with a little pamphlet if they're not deathly ill, you know, because we don't have the money to take care of people who are sick. What kind of craziness is this? I think the progressive community in this city really needs to think about what its priorities are and what they want to see happen. I think they need to get over whatever issues they have with Robert and get involved and make real change happen. If we all unify, if we all get together and tell the city council that things need to happen, change will happen. These people we put on the city council, they're accountable to us. We, the progressive community, put them in office. When they fail to deal with basic fundamental issues faced by this community, they need to be confronted. Maybe they need to be confronted in a constructive fashion, whatever that is, according to your individual opinion, but they need to be dealt with. They need to be talked to. Functional solutions need to be come up. We need to get over the issues of personality and get back to what politics and progressive politics in this town is really about. And that's making sure that the poor, the oppressed, the hungry are fed and sheltered and given health care and taken care of and given an opportunity to improve their lives, and that this city lives up to its progressive ideals and its progressive values. Thank you.
All right.
Monday, Labor Day, September 2nd.
It's about 20 to 2. Becky Johnson is cleaning up the sidewalk that some other vandal has despoiled with erasable chalk. Becky, what has led you to do this?
Jill.
Oh, I'm just trying to confuse the police and the merchants.
The vandal is removing the erasable chalk. At last, law and order has returned to Santa Cruz.
It's also part of my demonstration that it doesn't take $150 steam cleaner to remove chalk. In fact, chalk is one of the most easily removed items on the sidewalk if you're going to clean it. A little splash of water.
Downtown has sidewalk chalk.
First thing that disappears when you put a splash of water on is the chalk.
We'll see if later this sidewalk is seriously defaced.
Hello!
Well, hi there. I'm Senator Trent Lott of
I'm a private detective. My mother named me Hugh. My father named me Jim. And my last name is Bissell. So people call me Hugh Jimbissell. I awoke one morning with a start. The room was dark. I didn't know where I was. I looked at the alarm clock. It kept blinking 12 o'clock over and over again. I realized there must have been a blackout, and I knew I had to be in California. It was 1,100 hours, and I had a date with destiny at 1,300 hours. That meant I had barely 200 hours to shower and shave. My assignment was to find out who was responsible for the California energy crisis. People were saying they hadn't seen that many rolling blackouts since a young George W. took the car to get a keg for the frat house. Everyone was blaming deregulation, and I had been given very little information. I was working with fewer facts than Al Sharpton at a press conference. To make matters worse, the man who had hired me, Governor Gray Davis, said he wanted to avoid responsibility. Yeah, lately this guy had been issuing more denials than an NBA player on Father's Day. Well, I decided to start my search down at the Navy Yard. I knew I could get some information from a friend that I had served with for 15 years, the Rear Admiral. Not his rank, just a nickname. But that's another story. As I wandered the streets of L.A., people were complaining about the heat. One guy said he was hotter than the inside thighs of Rush Limbaugh's corduroys after a brisk walk. I know it's not a pretty visual. As night fell, the street lamps were as brown as a NASCAR race fan's teeth. I knew I had to work fast, and I was out of ideas. My brain was emptier than Ted Kennedy's minibar. And then I spotted it, a building that had more wires coming out of it than Linda Tripp's bra collection. Yeah, I knew this place was stealing power faster than Dick Cheney at a cabinet meeting. Well, I went inside, and I discovered that it was a secret plastic surgery compound for a famous entertainer. A group of doctors was about to perform an operation, and I yelled, stop. They parted. So we meet again, Cher. At first, I thought she was surprised to see me. But then I realized her eyebrows were always like that. I said, Cher, you look horrible. After all that plastic surgery, you still have bags under your eyes. She said, those are my breasts, you idiot. I decided not to mention the goatee. Anyway, we talked for a while. She said she'd agree to turn off all the equipment under one condition, that I'd run away with her, become her gigolo. She asked me how much I'd charge. I said, baby, I'm like the stealth bomber. $4,000 an inch. Yeah, but she didn't have 12 grand on her. I meant 32 grand.
Yeah, and sometimes the capital steps becomes the capital scraps. That's a particularly good one from When Bush Comes to Shove. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Today is Etienne Cabot's birthday. He's the founder of the 19th century utopian community New Icaria. It's also the day when 1692, when eight witches, quote-unquote, were hanged in Salem, Massachusetts. In 1792, when a new calendar was adopted in revolutionary France with 10-day weeks, 3-week months, and 12-month years, starting at year one. And, of course, when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by Abe Lincoln in the U.S. in 1862. This is also the day in 1975 when Sarah Jane Moore shot at U.S. President Gerald Ford but missed. And tomorrow, actually, the 23rd, is the birthday of one of my favorites, Victoria Clifton Woodhull. She's a proponent of free love, spiritual leader, first woman to run for the U.S. presidency with Frederick Douglass, a member of the First Internationale until expelled by Karl Marx. Victoria Clifton Woodhull, born Homer, Ohio, 1838. And today is the birthday of Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. Regular radical historians know that Elizabeth was a longtime activist, IWW member, communist, expelled from the ACLU, in 1940 for being a communist before they abandoned that discriminatory policy. On her imprisonment for political activism, she said or wrote, "Come what may, I was a political prisoner and proud of it. I felt no shame, no humiliation, no consciousness of guilt. To me, my number 11710 was a badge of honor. Known as the Rebel Girl, socialist union organizer, Irish-American professional revolutionary, founded the ACLU, but was ousted in 1940 for being a communist, a militant organizer, prolific essayist, and popular speaker. Elizabeth was the founding organizer of the Workers' Defense League, which waged such historic and famous cases as Sacco and Vanzetti. Inspired by Mother Jones, she was the leading organizer of the 1912 Bread and Roses textile strike in Massachusetts. She became the first woman to lead the Communist Party USA. She and other top CP leaders were charged under the anti-communist Smith Act during the 50s. She defended herself in court with flair, courage, and eloquence. She was jailed for teaching and advocating the violent overthrow of the government, served a three-year sentence, 1955 to 58. A spirited militant, she always preferred organizing miners and immigrants to bureaucratic party and reform work." That was Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. It's her birthday today. And I also brought in, I hope, I thought I brought it in. A little hard to find it. Actually, dug up a copy of the medical marijuana law that's on the statute on our books in Santa Cruz. And I'm hoping to do a more extensive analysis of it in the days to come as to how it could be changed to actually accommodate people who need medical marijuana and can't get it because of the city council's crazy law. And I was able to track down this Frederick Douglass quote. I actually issued a flyer on it. It's a famous quote. "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will." Frederick Douglass, 1857. Apparently, the full context of that, and this, it is depreciate agitation, not deprecate, incidentally. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation, you would think it might be deprecate, but it's not. Comes from a larger quote, "Let me give you a word of the philosophy of reform. The whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggle. The conflict has been exciting, agitating, all-absorbing, and for the time being, putting all other tumults to silence. It must do this, or it does nothing. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder or lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. In light of these ideas, Negroes will be hunted at the North and held and flogged at the South so long as they submit to these devilish outrages and make no resistance, either moral or physical. Men may not get all that they pay for in this world, but they must certainly pay for all they get. If we ever get free from the oppressions and wrongs heaped upon us, we must pay for their removal. We must do this by labor, by suffering, by sacrifice, and if needs be, by our lives and the lives of others." This is Frederick Douglass, 1857, writing about the emancipation struggle. And I've got a copy of this flyer. Give a call to 423-HUFF, and you yourself can get a copy, or come on down tomorrow to Merry Mondays. We're going to be marrying it up, and that'll be at Cooper and Pacific, 4 o'clock. Free food with Food Not Bombs, and some hot speeches from Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt, and some interesting video. And I should be able to tell you what that video is right now, but I'm not quite sure. We're going to try to put together something interesting from the files of video journalist Becky Johnson. Maybe she can call in and give us some idea if she comes up with something. But it's been pretty interesting, and we actually can get the sound to work. So come on down. There will, of course, be a bucket of erasable chalk for youngsters who wish to do some hopscotching. We don't know if any criminals are going to pick up that erasable chalk and use it, but we do know that there are at least five or six people who are facing $162 tickets because the city wants to wipe out the erasable chalk protest prospect, which has always been taken for granted in Santa Cruz and is now criminal behavior, according to the police department in the city of Santa Cruz, even though, as you heard, you actually couldn't see it, but I've seen it done, that erasable chalk washes away on the sidewalk. So all you got to do is bring a little cup of water, and that eliminates it. So if a merchant doesn't like what an erasable chalker chalks about ending the downtown ordinances, the laws that criminalize people from sitting peacefully down on the sidewalk, they can go out there with their hose or with just a glass of water and wash it away, and they can write whatever they want in its place or leave the sidewalk pristine and clean, as we know those downtown sidewalks are, so pristine and clean. Instead, people are going to jail for erasable chalking. They've already jailed at least two people, Becky Johnson and Nathaniel Kennedy, for chalking, and arrested numerous others and cited still more. It is political repression in Santa Cruz. It's really what it is. It is an attempt to silence a voice, where the voice is the most manifest and easy to read kind of voice, and traditionally quite well accepted. But the police, as they've been sort of eating up the public space by going after musicians this spring and summer, and eating up the public space by going after the redevelopment agency and the downtown association, by going after New Leaf Markets open space and destroying that, taking away benches from in front of the Pacific Cookie Company and then in front of Borders, and then going after all of us in all business districts in town, and in the case of the solicitation ordinance, in all the sidewalks in town, with expanded anti-homeless laws against peaceful soliciting, against sitting, against musicians. And you're saying, well, wait a minute, weren't the musicians' laws put on hold? Well, that's an interesting thing, and we're going to be talking about that more in the shows that come up. It is true that the expanding the ordinance from a 6-foot and 10-foot zone bar, forbidden zone, to a 14-foot has been put on hold, but since the solicitation ordinance is not, it's still illegal to sit there with playing music with a sign that says donations in virtually all of the downtown area. And if you walk downtown, it's interesting. I didn't see many people down there at all last night when I was down there between 9 and 10:30. It could have been just the Saturday night when I was down there. But there was one horrible musician who was wailing his tune next to the coffee roasting company in the alcove. He was illegal under several ordinances, downtown ordinances. But the normal musicians that play in front of Costa Brava or Borders or the Cooper House weren't there at all. They were gone. There was no... It's like the word is spreading. You don't come to Santa Cruz for that, even though it seems like police have been given the word don't enforce these ordinances generally. Even the old ordinance that says you can't sit 6 feet from a building, don't enforce that. I have a picture of officers Hilliard and his co-officer standing behind, I think it's Ernie, street pianist, who's a very good pianist, in his shopping cart. Ernie was less than 6 feet from the building that's right across from both the Cinema 9 and the O'Neill Surf Shop, playing his instrument, and it's illegal what he's doing, but they're not arresting him. And the point here is, well, we don't want, you know, isn't that a good thing that they're not arresting him or ticketing him? Yeah, it's good, but if it's at police discretion, they can move in at any time. And they're obviously not enforcing laws strictly, as the city council has urged and as the downtown association has urged, and city council has told them to do that. Instead, they're doing it whenever they feel like it. And that's a police state, when laws are enforced not based on how they're written, but based on the preferences of the police officers at the moment. And it just means that when people aren't looking, or when the merchants decide they want to complain, then these people will be taken away, and they have no rights. The only right they have is if they you know, can tease out a smile on the politician, the police officer, or the merchant's face. That's destruction of all dignity downtown. And I don't think musicians should be prepared, want to really deal with that. I think that may be driving them away. I don't know for sure. I haven't got a lot of data. I'm going to be continuing to get data. And, of course, we're trying to get more data for the upcoming CPRB meeting, the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board meeting on October 14th, when we're going to be presenting evidence of police harassment over the last 6 months. And hopefully you will come, whoever you are, and listen and testify to that. So that's going to be coming up. And if you want to phone in any reports you have or information, the number to call is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a voicemail. You can't get me, but I will try to get back to you by phone. And it does have a fairly long message, both outgoing and incoming. So you can skip it by pushing the pound key, and you can leave a long message of your own if you have seen something you think is untoward or you have information that you want to pass on. So let's, dare I try another cut from the Capitol steps after that last... I'll try one more. I'm not terribly optimistic, but let's see what happens here.
This evening, representing the peoples of Pakistan, and I represent the peoples of India, and we are very upset that the U.S. has decided to give aid to our most worstest, fiercest enemy, Pakistan.
And we are very, very upset because your country has always liked India better than us. It's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair.
So India and Pakistan have decided to take drastic measures.
We have just closed every 7-Eleven in your country.
Yeah, I don't much like this one either. I'm going to skip ahead to the next one. Call me the political censor. I don't go for the old racial stuff, and particularly when the political analysis is so superficial. So let's try Capital Steps number 20 and see what we got here.
He was afraid to be sworn into office. He was so nervous, his friends called him dumb. He was afraid that he'd run for an office that everyone else had run from. 2, 3, 4, the office has revolving doors. Now it's the fifth time in 2 weeks we've seen a president of Argentina.
All the others have taken a dive.
El Presidente has a say-so, now he'll fix the falling peso.
My term in office expires at 5.
For the past several weeks, saw the rest quit.
I would stay, but I can't take much more.
Argentina is getting so desperate that we might give the job to Al Gore. 2, 3, 4, President Alberto Gore. Now it's the sixth time in 2 weeks we've seen a president of Argentina.
Mama always told me I'd be president someday.
It's kind of different, kind of scary, moving down to Buenos Aires.
I thought she meant of the U.S. of A.
Argentina has gotten into such debt.
$200 billion, no problem at all.
How can we get that much cash?
Hey, it's no sweat. I know a few Buddhist monks I can call.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And, boy, the Capital Steps definitely needs a boost in the arm or a kick in the butt. I don't know which. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm actually moving into the sort of live portion of the show with one mic in hand. Apparently, we are down to one mic. For those of you who want to donate equipment, it's time to whip out the old checkbook and or your old microphones around the house. Give a call to 427-4523. That's Free Radio's voicemail. You can also call if you have a public service announcement or a question about the studio. I'm going to actually start with my most, a so-called news source, very laughingly used, called the Sunday Santa Cruz Sentinel. The headline, for those of you who are looking at it, is County Workers Vote on Contract. Union tally may be close as many members show dissatisfaction with the PAC. because in the studio with me I have two SEIU union members. We're talking with...
Hi, Joanne's executive board, city chapter, also steward and city worker.
Okay, Joe, and...
And I'm Claire Machado. I work for the county planning department, and I'm an SEIU worker under this contract.
Street musician who may be arrested tomorrow for chalking on the sidewalk. You never can tell.
Yeah, sometimes I like to be artistic. We'll see what happens.
It's also, I was a guest at a previous show. Anyway, the article, I'm going to read a bit of it, and then I'm going to ask for some comment. If you want to call in, you can comment, because we had hoped to get a strident critic of this particular contract just to get some contrast, because I'm not quite sure how our guests are standing. And I haven't yet been able to contact strident critics. Maybe all you strident critics out there, here's your chance to get strident and get critical. 427-3772, 427-FRSC to call in. Guests, if you see that light flashing, and I don't notice it, just kick me in the you know what. The story by Gene Harlick, Aptos. County workers predicted a close vote in favor of a new labor contract after hearing its particulars and casting ballots at a union meeting on Saturday. I'm going to put that bomb outside. Most workers gave lukewarm approval to the contract, saying it's the best they could expect for the economy and the current board of supes. But a strong minority fervently opposed it. I feel like the union's really letting us down, said Deanna Laws, a mental health worker. The ballots will be counted Monday. The tentative contract was arrived at early Thursday morning after a 16-hour negotiation session. County workers had been on strike 3 days, which they say forced the county to make its offer. By the way, if you hear of any outright lies or misstatements or significant omissions, please interrupt. The Sentinel is famous for bad journalism. The three-year contract would give members of the Service Employees International Union Local 415 salary parity with workers in nearby counties after 3 years. However, the benchmark will be what the workers in other counties make now, not what they'll be making in 3 years. A recent study found Santa Cruz County workers earn an average of 7% less than their counterparts in neighboring counties. The contract would also require the county to pay 100% of the health insurance premiums for its employees, but the contract would only cover 75% of the premiums for children and spouses. In addition to the parity wage increases, workers would receive cost of living raises of 4%, 3.75%, and 3% in the first, second, and third years, respectively. The contract requires a simple majority vote for approval. Opposition, first of all, any inaccuracies or errors there, Joe?
It sounds pretty accurate from what I have heard.
Anything missing that we should know about in that contract that's being proposed that's important?
Not to my knowledge.
How about you, Claire? Any thoughts?
Well, I think it's important that most of the issues that the negotiating team had on the table were addressed. I don't think anything got left at the table. Whether they were addressed adequately, I think, is a big question.
Continuing the story in today's Sentinel. Opposition centered on the 3 years before salary parity would be granted on health coverage for children. Single parents are hurt most by the plan, workers said, and many turned out in force to protest the contract at a Watsonville meeting on Friday. Is that true?
I think the South County membership, especially in Watsonville, are hardest hit in that area. There are a lot of single working parents down there. I know of several. I'm one myself. We did have a benefit, though, last night, and we actually raised $1,266 for the strike assistance fund, and that was primarily for the single parents. So hopefully, if they have needs, they'll put in a requisition.
One piece of bread per week for the next 3 years, they will be able to, maybe half a piece of bread. It's small, but it's mighty. Murray, it's just mighty small at the moment. The debate turned angry and hostile, according to workers who attended both the Watsonville meeting and Saturday's meeting. I pause while I turn the page. Don't go way out there. And you can call in, by the way, if you want to join this discussion, 427-4523. That's the crackle of the Santa Cruz Sentinel out there. Cabrillo College is where the vote was held. Laws, a single mother, this is a critic of the proposal, said she'll be losing money by the contract's end. The staggered parity increases won't make up for how much her son's health premium will go up by 2005, she said. Even with the county paying 75% of the cost, she'll still have to pay $242 a month because of projected premium hikes. Claire?
That's true. I still will be paying money for my child, and it does totally wipe out any parity increase I'm really going to receive, and the cost of living as well.
Why did the union leaders decide to stop instead of pushing for a contract which would have taken care of those problems?
Well, I think they had a state mediator, and they worked with that state mediator to, you know, get some mediation from the county, which, you know, I don't think was moving. And I believe the 11th hour issue was market rate and the use of below market rate or market rate. And the
explain that for us, could you?
I'm not sure I can.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, what I believe it is based on a GPI type index of what
GPI is
kind of has to do with the cost of living index. That's what we used in the city negotiations. And so according to this, however the statistics are analyzed in by who, which I don't know, those are the figures that they arrive at.
So this was to placate the state mediator or something, or to placate the county? Or I'm sorry, I'm missing the point as to why this issue was not pushed.
Well, I think the issue was pushed, and they couldn't even reach a tentative agreement until at least that position was relinquished by the county, the county side. I think,
what
again,
position did the county relinquish?
Again, the use of, I guess they want to use below market rate, and the union wanted them to use market rate, and so the union held strong on that issue.
But the main issue of not having, of having adequate health to cover your children apparently got dumped.
The net benefit to me was $30 per, I guess, monthly, whatever the monthly, what do they call it, fees are for it. So I only got a $30 reduction per month.
Yeah, I heard it's roughly 50 to 75% of what a normal employee would be. The spouse or children only get maybe half.
75% is what the Sentinel says, but you could probably, I'm sure you know better than they do. Well, what about other cities? How do other cities treat these health problems? How do other counties?
Well, I think the benefits range, I think, from $6,000 a year up to $9,000 a year per employee. I've worked in other counties. I've worked for other cities. And in all cases, my benefits were covered. The contribution by the agency involved was...
Your kids.
Yes. Yes, I didn't...
Covering, they're not doing what other counties are doing, is what you're saying, based on your experience.
Based on what I've had elsewhere and what we've been able to apparently negotiate elsewhere, it's not the same. It's a reduced benefit, and I'm paying out of pocket where I wouldn't have working elsewhere.
Well, you know, this is really kind of an accord with the Great American Health Plan, which is don't get sick. Let's move on. I mean, after all,
as a parent, when your child's, you know, in class with 30 other kids and they're getting sick, and, you know, they... Children do that. They're the most vulnerable, you know, other than the elderly.
You don't want to make waves at the county level here. Go back to work and shut up, okay?
I have my own, you know, interest to look out for my family, like everyone else. And I haven't voted on this contract. I'm not happy with some of the things in the contract, and I will likely vote no, even just to send a message back that we're not totally happy here. You've moved a little county. I think we appreciate some movement, but at the same time, it feels like we're still begging for crumbs at times, and having to be satisfied with those crumbs that they want to dish out instead of really, really value, you know, the human resource and make it a proud thing to work for government and want to contribute to the local community.
What do you think, Joe? Are you going to jump on board this radical anarchist associate here, or are you going to stand up and support your union negotiators? After all, they did the best they could, right?
Well, they kind of answer to, in the city, the council. I know at our last contract negotiations, I was a negotiating team member, and Cliff Tillman basically came and told us that they were real fearful of what the media was going to say if they gave us more than, you know, I think we got a decent contract, 4.25 over 3 years, which isn't decent, but it was the best we've ever gotten. And so they're pretty fearful of what the media is going to say and what their constituency is going to say.
I think the most interesting concept I've heard so far is that out of negotiations, is that the county was afraid to give employees actually more than the parity study showed that they were out of parity, and they were willing to do that for some classifications that have publicly had difficulty and criticism. And I think they were afraid politically that if they did that for a few classifications, they'd open up Pandora's box for the rest of the classifications to say, what about me? And, you know, then I question, okay, well, gee, Why couldn't that have changed?
Okay, let's see if you're hearable. Go ahead.
Hi, Robert. This is Roxanne.
Let's see.
Can you hear me?
Well, let's get a microphone available, actually earphones for the folks, and see if they can hear you. You'll have to share those earphones, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Makes for a very friendly studio situation. Go ahead, caller.
Robert, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Roxanne.
Go ahead, Roxanne.
Hi. Listen, I just wanted to say about the union contract, I'm really proud of everyone for going out on strike, but it's really unfortunate so many times over the last, like, 12 or 13 years, they've never struck, and everything's were taken away every 3 or 4 years. During the time that I worked at the county, I came into the county during that stick out that's been publicized. I mean, the managers don't know what they're doing. During that time, I was a temp from Manpower, so I was actually inside working. But, I mean, the strikers could have brought the county to their knees, and they chose not to. They went back on good faith. So I really feel like during the time I was there, they suspended raises. They suspended moving people up the step they were supposed to be moved to. You know, if you work there 3 years, there's, you know,
If the will of the membership votes this contract down, we're telling them, you know, you go back to the table for us. I know they're tired. I know they feel they may have done the best they can, but they're in a position to follow what the membership wants.
Joe? Yeah, that's true. You're really kind of dependent on your negotiating team. So for people that work for the city, we're going to be nominating a negotiating team coming up for the contract next year. You should vote in some people that you really know are going to stand up for what you want.
Question before you respond to that, Claire, is I guess we didn't answer the question about whether I got to get a memory pill. Go ahead.
Well, I think it also depends on who participates. I mean, you know, a lot of us single parents, we're at home taking care of our kids when they're holding meetings, you know, and it's hard to get child care and do those things that, you know, you can try to make those arrangements in advance. But, you know, the people who end up participating, I think, are those. I think it needs to become easier to get the message and communicate to the union. I know after our Thursday program, I was upset about not having information, and I did go down to the SIEU office, and I said, look, you need to know there are people out there like me who are upset, and there's rumors running around, and you need information coming from you to them that's credible that they can feel good about, and it's very important, the communication.
When did you actually get the information, and how long was it denied to you and other members?
Well, I don't think the information was at this point denied. I think that they didn't have it all. If you can see the handout of the classifications, they did some this one. They kind of tried to calculate it all out and show it in numbers that, you know, people could understand. It took them some time. I guess they had some computer problems to do that. But
Claire, it's really hard for me to believe that if they came up with a proposal, they had the proposal when they walked away from the negotiating table, and they could have showed it to everybody half an hour later with copies to the entire membership and said, you know, what do you think? You can all talk about this and we'll vote on Monday. For some reason, it was kept secret. And for how long was it kept secret from you?
From the time we were told to go back to work, which was Thursday morning, until Friday at 7 p.m. when it was released at that Watsonville meeting, it was released to the full membership.
It was about 2 days. 2 days. I don't understand why that would be the case. It seems to me that that's a way of avoiding public debate, not just in the community, but in the union community, so that those who want to oppose it don't have any time to organize. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. In the last negotiations, we kind of had this cloak of secrecy, too, and you know, no one ever really questioned it. It was just a given that we acted this way, and yeah, I can't think of any good reason other than just to keep it secret.
I do appreciate, though, the union providing time for the membership to vote and actually think about the contract. You know, from Friday we have to Monday to vote, so we have 3-4 you know, days to consider it and make an informed decision.
You're on the air with Joe Enns and Claire Machado.
Hello, Robert. I don't want to be out of context. I was just able to tune in right now, and I understood that perhaps there was going to be some conversation about the utility tax repeal in Santa Cruz.
That actually, Joe's going to be talking about that in a bit, but do you have anything you want to...
Yeah, I'll make it short and sweet. First of all, the basic rationale given by the opponents in the county matter of the utility tax repeal...
Joe, let me interrupt you for a minute. I mean, Fred, let me interrupt you for a minute. What I mean is, in terms of what we're discussing now, do you have any thoughts? Have you been listening?
Oh, yeah, well, I just want to say I'm really glad that the SEIU people are hopefully going to get closer to a decent wage, and it's too bad they had to take a personal sacrifice of going on strike to do it.
Well, do you think that, I mean, what the nub of what we're talking about is whether the union is, you know, essentially surrendering or caving on key demands and keeping information secret and, in essence, selling out union members? That's my question, and I don't know the answer to it, but I was raising that here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that the members will be able to have access to all the pertinent information so they can make a democratic decision. That's about all I can say given the information I have.
Before we get on to the utility tax, are you going to be around for a while, or are you leaving? Yeah, you can. I mean, it would be better if we could kind of present it in more of a coherent form, because we haven't really gotten into it yet. No, I appreciate your calling. Any other comments about SEIU union practices generally you think that are relevant here? Or?
I don't. I've never heard really much complaint from the rank and file, so I hope that it'll be a democratically run union, as I hope all unions will be. And so far, I don't really see much to the contrary, although I don't really have a lot of information on it.
Okay.
And I'll call back in a bit on the utility tax.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And phone lines are open here at 427-3772. Claire, you've handed me a list of, actually this was out, I'm sure, long before the negotiating deal was concluded, this list of how management is taking it in hand over fist. Is management going to take a cut in all this, or is that not on...
This is for negotiated salaries. This is, right now, the county administrative officer in February 2001, her salary was $147,000. Her increase of salary over the term of her contract will be $43,000, so that by the end of February 2003, the highest paid person is going to be making $190,000, $512 with a bonus of $7,000.
What I'm asking is, is that up for grabs on the table at all? I mean, is the union saying, look, if you want us to cut back our demands, how about cutting back on some of the rich pastries for these management types?
This was negotiated. In fact, this was agreed to just after our last contract, in the sense that this is a fait accompli. This is what they're going to get. This is what they negotiated.
Yeah, but nothing is ever a fait accompli. What holds this in place?
This is what was negotiated by the management union with the county.
And the management union, this is all the highly paid heads of the management.
6% increase over time. That's how it calculates, I believe.
So I guess it's not considered cricket to suggest that the management union's contract be broken in favor of a broader benefits for those of the who have needs, like mothers with single children who are struggling along on low salaries that don't involve $192,000 a year.
Well, I'm actually proud of the planning management who came forward and donated personally to the membership. I wish other managers would consider the same, and especially the CAO.
Well, private donations are nice, and a 999 points of light are always very touching, or is it 1,000? But the fact is, you don't live off of charity unless, people aren't working there. You guys are doing work, presumably, for the county, though some would dispute that, of course. Nonetheless, it looks that way. You should be paid for what you're doing. And those who are getting huge salaries should not have to, you can always commend them for giving back some of their salary, but shouldn't it be taken back?
I don't know what the process would be to do that, first of all, but they would argue that that's the market rate.
Panhandlers out front.
Maybe, but they would argue that that's the market rate they have to pay to get qualified people to fill those positions to manage your county properly.
You do need, you definitely need $192,000 to do the fine job that Susan is doing. What do you think, Joe?
Yes, she really needs that much money to do the fine job she's doing, like a lot of other bureaucrats in the city that are making those kind of wages.
So let's look a little bit. So the big issues on this contract that will be coming up for a vote tomorrow are going to be, I don't want to get into all the minutiae because it's not going to be really understandable, but health benefits that are not in parity with other counties and essentially penalize those with children and spouses, right?
Well, it only penalizes us in the way that it's not fully covered. It depends on what you consider a penalty. To me, it's just I would like to see them come forward and cover and all of our families so we have peace of mind when we work. I think that if I'm doing a good job and giving you 100% of my brain and my energy, then the only thing I ask is peace of mind, and to me that's covering my child's health care.
But apparently not this year. Maybe in 3 more years you can come back.
Yeah, in 3 more years if the added expense doesn't, you know, eat up everything else. I mean, I have a mortgage payment, and I have my daughter in parochial school, and, you know, the cost of those things are going up as well as the energy. I mean, my energy bill after the last contract, we had the energy crisis, and that, I mean, hell, it ate up most of any increase I saw even in the last contract just because of that, you know, problem.
So what are the arguments that are being made by those who are going to be coming? This is a meeting of the membership on Monday. Looks like we got an incoming call here. Let's put that question on hold while we take this caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I don't know if you want to hear from me again. It's Roxanne, but I had one other thought.
We always like to hear from you.
Robert, one thing that I would really like to say, if the public has any doubt about the county employees earning their pay or whatever, is that the county has been doing cost savings for many years in the form of when somebody quits their job, instead of hiring someone else takes on half their load and another person who's already in place takes on half their load. And it's called cost savings.
The guests are nodding vigorously and laughing and agreeing with you.
Okay, you know, these people are being so politically correct that you have up there right now. And the truth is that SEIU knows about this. They know that people in career works work till 7 o'clock at night without being paid anything extra. They know. And people do that because they can't keep up with their caseload. People in child protective services, people in all of the services, just that's all I can speak about because that's the kind of job that I had. So when you don't get your raise after 3 years, or you don't get what you're expecting, and you're actually doing 2.5 times the work that you started with at the beginning of that 3 years, it's not a good feeling.
Now, wait a minute, Roxanne. We are in a terrorist emergency here. Don't you understand that greater sacrifices, as the president has said, are called for?
Well, it would be different if we were a county that really didn't have money. But when you see the kind of raises that the supervisors vote for themselves in, and they have an absolute fit over the repeal of utility taxes, and yet people have gone in independently and seen that there's money in the coffers. No, I don't think that this is a time to sacrifice, especially since most people in Santa Cruz, most, are barely making it. I saw in the Sunday paper this morning, the real estate section, that the average, you know, wage of the American family has gone up to $64,000 a year. I don't think so. If we're talking about parity, then Santa Cruz is way behind.
Roxanne, before you leave, and I, by the way, I appreciate your calling in. You're welcome to call in again
I'm sorry. I don't want to bogart the phone.
I appreciate.
This is a subject that
please bogart the phone. But I'll cut you off if I don't like the bogarting. I'm the director here. But what I wanted to tell you, to also suggest that you might want to do is talk about the utility tax repeal, since I believe the previous caller is going to call in and support or oppose utility tax repeal. We're going to be talking about that shortly. Are you going to be listening?
I know, politically correct, bleeding heart. I swear. I'm in the mode of keeping the money for me and my kids. I've had it. I can't support the whole world.
Okay. Well, that's what I want. We want to hear more details from you on that. And it sounds like you're a person who is a person of conscience who's concerned about the civil rights of homeless people. You've showed up and spoken repeatedly at city council meetings. It's not like you know, you're amassing a huge stock portfolio off to the side and want to keep your real estate dealings and that sort of thing. So, you know, you are a person who isn't interested in seeing social services cut back necessarily, and yet you favor, and I guess we'll be talking about this later, the utility tax repeal at the city level, right?
I think the only reason that social services will be cut back will be in retaliation, will be because I told you so and I'm going to prove it, not because the money's not there. And trust me, that's how much, really, our government cares about social services. They will use the court as pawns.
Joe here is nodding in agreement. Let's see if we can ruin his career by getting him to speak out publicly on this. Yeah, they definitely do. You want to stay on or call back?
I can do both, whatever you want.
Why don't you call back, because I think we may want to get a... But I want you to call back.
Okay, well, I will if I can.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I'll pull off the stops on being politically correct here. yeah, we were called into a big session, everybody in Parks and Rec, and yeah, the big scare thing is going to go out. And, you know, I just don't know how the city got themselves into this mess, you know, to where they're depending everybody's job and all these services. They're going to shut down the teen center. The big scare tactics on to keep this money. You know, what I think they should really work for is tax the shit out of the rich. And, you know, and come up with this money for when our contract comes around. One thing I'm really going to say, which is a little bit off the utility tax, is I hate to do this to the county, but I'm really, I think this isn't very politically correct, but you need to get rid of that Joni Mitchell surf Nazi, Marty Wormhout. Vote her out. Vote Mark Primack in, because he is very much against labor, and he's presently a city council member. I've been to his fundraisers. Yeah, he's against labor. He says that SEIU has a monopoly on labor. That's a direct quote, and he is against unions.
So, okay, and people might not quite understand this, but the reason you want to vote him out, as I understand from a previous conversation with you, is you want him out of the city council and dump him in the board of supervisors, please, talking about Mark Primack. So you haven't got much use for Primack or Wormhout, is what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah, Marty's the same, a business as usual, you know, a career politician doing nothing and, you know, trying to act like she does, and Mark's going to do some harm to us. You know, we don't need his vote come contract negotiations, and he's definitely not going to be somebody we want. And these are the people we really need to, these elected representatives, these are the people that, you know, we really have to get the word out about their positions.
Now we are going to be a little controversial here, because actually it was Marty who first of all raised the issue of, you know, parity with planning staff publicly, which, you know, I think galvanized, you know, much more movement by the grand jury and others to show problems. So, you know, frankly, I've seen her...
It's in English for for us naive lay people out there, Claire.
I just believe she's been supportive to get the parity issues on the table, and I appreciate that.
What's the parity issue?
Well, just making sure that we're paid equivalently to the other county areas, other nine, eight, nine local counties. It used to be nine, now it's eight.
We use the Planning Commission, which... is, of course, virulently attacked on KSCO. We may have Steve Hartman calling in, so watch out, you guys.
I think the one thing I did, what I was laughing the most about, I loved in Roxanne's call, is I have worked through two rounds of turnover in the planning department in my section. The first time we lost three people, and that's 60% at the time of the enforcement staff. I'm sure most of you people out there who want to build without permits didn't mind that we didn't have as many people out there enforcing, but that when you have no people for 9 months and then you retrain them for 9 months and then you lose them after a year and you lose two out of them and then you're, you know, down for another 9 months and then you're retraining for another 9 months and finally I have a whole team and I'm afraid, you know, to lose that team because the net result to the public was a full year's loss of cases or investigations being completed and the, you know, between the brain scramble we go through and the extra work, you know, my two co-workers said, I'm going to file a grievance if I have to take on more work. And so, you know, a lot of reason I know about, you know, a lot of cases in the county is because during that time I saw more cases than, you know, I probably would have wanted to. But I didn't have an opportunity to say no, that you just rise to the occasion. You have to. There's nothing else you can do. And you keep trying to do the best quality work you can for the people out there who appreciate it. and you hope that they care enough to continue to pay your taxes to get KRS out.
Right, but getting back, of course, to the key issue, which is utility tax repeal, as well as the issue of SEIU representation, and what can workers do on Monday to... are the workers prepared to go out on strike again if that if they voted down? Do you think that... what's your feeling? Are they going to vote it down?
I don't have a good feeling about that at this point. I've heard both sides from the people I know, and they are prepared, though. We were prepared to stay out. There's a big contingent that, you know, we're like, why are we even going back when we haven't voted yet? So I think we're prepared.
Coming on the air with us now is the notorious and much beloved Steve Hartman from KSCO, who, Steve, I would like to introduce you to our two guests. We have with us Joe Enns of the City Workers, and weighing in from the county planning, one of your favorite departments, is Claire Machado. I almost get that name. And Steve, you can't really... we have got a horrible equipment here in the studio, so we don't have the KSCO facilities. But
you aren't asking for a grant, are you?
Hey, send your money in immediately, man. Definitely. And they're listening in to you, so they can hear you as you speak. You have to turn on the radio to hear them, though. So we have this sort of...
well,
if you got your radio...
is that how it works?
It's sort of a primitive
system.
Well,
I can turn
system.
On the radio, and I'm not going to get any feedback, right?
Right, as long as you don't turn on too loud.
Okay.
And you'll be able to hear yourself.
Well, hello, Joe and Claire.
Hi there, Mr. Hartman.
What can I say?
We've talked a little bit about the SEIU's coming up for a vote, and it's contracted, and you of course referred me to the Sentinel today, so you know what that's about. There are two discussions. One is the SEIU adequately representing its people, and the other question, of course, maybe we should turn to that one now, is the utility tax repeal. Of course, you've been advocating its repeal, and you talked about that quite consistently. And
only for 18 years.
So give us the short version of why the city utility tax should be repealed.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back to when it was enacted. At the time it was enacted, back in 1984, I asked them not to do it because there would be no stopping it. And I actually filed an initiative petition to overturn the council's decision, and was told at that time that as a citizen I didn't have a right to interfere in city council budgetary actions. Then I ran it again in 1994 and gave it to a group, grassroots organization, United for Progress. They had a fellow by the name of Gordon Poole, who in the middle of the campaign decided to steal some pot from his neighbor's house on the second floor and fell off the balcony and broke his back and killed not only the chances for the repeal, but also district elections, which is an initiative I co-authored at that time. And
Do you think the DAA was behind this?
And then, hey, you know, if you want to throw that one in there, we can do that one as well. I lost both my mother and my father right here in the house that I'm sitting in, both to cancer. I injected both with morphine and Brompton cocktails on the last days of their life. Went from 180 pounds to 260 pounds in 7 months. So, you know, I know what pain is about, and I don't think that any human being should be told that they can't take something that they think is going to help them. I'm sorry. I just that's just the way I feel about it.
You're just not voting for the Bears this year.
I understand that the federal government's got its job to do, and they did it. But the federal government, you know, doesn't have the same priorities that normal people do. It doesn't have the same priorities at the city level or the county level or the state level or the federal government. Their priorities are not ours. Theirs is about bureaucracy, keeping their jobs and being important, and ours is trying to survive.
The utility tax is going to defund social services and throw folks out on the streets who are in need of social services, according to numerous city politicians and social service providers. What's your response to that?
I think it's time. It's past due time. We have too many people in this community that are living off of other people. And those other people that they're living on are getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed to the point where they're coming to their own crisis days in the community, even though heretofore they've been able to support themselves. The bottom line is that Santa Cruz is a very, very expensive community to live in, and wages are the pits. And, you know, like some people would like to hobnob with the rich and famous in Hollywood, not everybody can live there, not everybody can live in Santa Monica, not everybody can live in Beverly Hills, and not everybody can live in Santa Cruz. And the smart thing for people to do is to find locations where housing is cheap and wages are higher and work your way up like everybody else does.
So pay up or get out, that sort of thing.
I think it's come to that. Look, we've got all this greenbelt that was, we've got, what, 1,400 acres of greenbelt. All of that property has been taken off the tax rolls. The government screams about Prop 13, yet property tax revenues have doubled in the past 10 years. Utility tax has gone up over triple. And it is killing people. We need to gut the city and start with essential services, police, fire, street maintenance, the things that people think that they are supposed to be paying taxes for first, and then dole out the leftovers for those other essential services as the community might think is most important.
Do let me get a response from these two guests as to you, unless there's more you want to say before we go to them.
Okay.
Joe and Claire, any comments?
I think you brought up some really good points. I have to say, keep the utility tax until we can make the changes and tax the rich to where they should be taxed. And you're really hurting union workers, and I think the union workers are the first line of defense, really, against the oppressive hierarchy of money mongers, if you will.
Claire, any comments?
Well, I think the public needs to know and understand where their dollar goes and how some of their dollars are cost recovered. For example, the work I do, they cost recover for fees for violations. And the funny part is I only make $30 an hour, but they're charging you $102 for my time. And you know, that's a hell of a lot of overhead.
Well, it's also true, is it not, Steve, and I've heard this from your co-host, Mike Schmidt, who I've tried to reach but haven't been able to today, that this is a huge county planning department in comparison with other counties its size.
Yes, it's true at the county level, and it's true in other departments besides planning. It's true at the city level. Look at Parks and Recreation. The average city puts forth about 7% of its general fund to Parks and Recreation. Santa Cruz is almost 21%. Most communities put forth 70% of their general fund for police and fire. Even with the utility tax, an extra $8 million a year, police and fire are funded at only 43%. Our problem is that there has been no stopping the progressive movement in this community. And the local people don't have a say in how their community is run. Yes, I feel that students voting in this community has been our demise. Should they be voting? Of course they should be voting. Where should they be voting? They should be voting where their taxes are paid, which is by their parents, which is their home of record. What students have been used for in Santa Cruz is to mobilize and assemble to use as a weapon against the rest of the local community. So this community is going a direction for experimental purposes and in a direction that the local people can't afford.
Let me get a comment.
Listen, wait a minute. Yeah. Students rent the green belt for the time they're here. The people who live here pay for it throughout their lives here, and all of that property has been taken off the tax rolls. There is so much micromanagement in this community. That is why you have the costs that you have. We saw the east side of Santa Cruz literally destroyed by changing from four lanes to three lanes on Soquel Avenue between Shoppers Corner and Seabright. I call it the stupid zone. It absolutely destroyed the Seabright neighborhood. It took them $100,000 to create that mess. Now they say it's going to take $3 million to fix it. These people don't make any sense, and they are continually put into office to continue not to make any sense or do for the majority of people in this
community. Let's get a counter response or some reaction to what you said.
Well, I want to defend the county planning staff because they are working under conditions where they have the largest zoning ordinance to operate under, with a lot more provisions than a lot of other local jurisdictions have. That requires knowledge, and you want those people retained. So it's a very hard book to learn and apply immediately. And so you want to give those people, you know, enough so they have longevity. If you want those things changed, you have to do that through your representative government. We only can apply what those ordinances say. We don't get to change them, and we only get to apply what policies come down from management. So we're caught in the machine. You want to change the machine, either change the ordinances, reduce them, make it easier for the people who are, you know, having to adhere to them, and it's hard to do.
How about you, Jim? Any comments?
You're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem.
Right. Well, now, my response to this was my response to what I said to Mike, which is he was saying that the attempt to penalize social services for I think he's more an advocate of social services than you are, Steve. But he said that
there are some social services that I am absolutely in support of, but it doesn't deal with the masses. It deals with a particular set of people. For instance, I think that we owe an obligation to our seniors. I think we have to have programs like elder care, for instance, for our Alzheimer patients. I think we need to have the stroke center and things of that, the Duran Center for the Blind, etc. But there is just too much giveaway stuff. Child care, for instance. If you can't afford to raise your child in Santa Cruz on your own, then you need to be someplace else. It's not my responsibility to pay so that you can have a job in Santa Cruz while I pay for your kid's support. It's just not there. It's not my responsibility to pay for you to have your methadone or the $40 per way round trip fares that those methadone patients use to take taxis in and out of town to get their fixes in the first place 3, 4, 5 times a week. These kind of programs, these social programs, they're not my responsibility. I did not take you to raise. This is a country of capitalists. You do as you do in this country for yourself as far as you can, and there is no limit unless you are hindered by government, which I am.
Okay, now this is, of course, there's a difference of philosophy here. My response to my concerns about the utility tax and its effectiveness and the repeal situation has to do with whether the utility tax is actually reaching people who need these services. I would probably disagree with you about whether there should be services, but I would tend to be critical of the fact that the money goes to middle-class workers and doesn't get down to homeless people or people who are trying to use drug abuse and methadone type services.
I think it was sheer stupidity to put the homeless center at River Street so that the people from that particular development will say only have a 4-block walk to our primary economic engine generator of the community to wipe it out.
Well, they moved them away from the town clock.
I look at the Miss California pageant, which may not be politically correct to students and others, but it was bringing in $10 million in revenue back in 1985 when it was run out of town. Today it would probably be generating $25 or $30 million in revenue. The city didn't care. To hell with that revenue. Let the people pay it. They passed the utility tax. You did the same thing with the Navy ship issue. Capitola said that was the biggest 3-day period that they had ever had. And what happened to that revenue in Santa Cruz? Just wiped out. No problem. The people will make it up through their utility taxes. Utility tax has gone up over 1,000% since it was enacted in 1985. Borders wants to come to town. The city tries to throw them out. That building, regardless of whether it's corporate enterprise or not, is part of the economic engine for the city of Santa Cruz, and they should be paying the bills rather than people in the community who can't afford to do it. There's too many people here that don't make enough money, and you're taking what little bit they do have.
Now, Steve, you are not only a passionate spokesman for this point of view, but you're a man who can be heard every weekday from noon to 1 on KSCO.
Well, yeah, I guess you get to get heard on KSCO.
And on Wednesday, I guess I'm going to be showing up at KSCO, slandering Mike Swerling, spewing obscenities, and denouncing our way of life. And perhaps
only if I turn. Remember, I control your microphone.
Good point. And luckily, for once, I control your microphone. Let me see if our two guests, Joe Enns and Clara Machado have any comments on what you said. And then I'm going to open up the line to other callers. And you're welcome to call back. And I appreciate your having called in.
I just want to make one more point, and then I'll go and stay gone.
Okay. Well, you can have to stay gone. But go ahead.
And that is that this city is designing the political campaign around intimidation and fear by leveling it upon the populace. They're talking with the utility tax. Look, if you repeal this, we're going to lose all our paramedics and life support people, ambulance service, things like that. Yet we have Measure Q, the TOT tax, which is supposed to fund those particular programs. So even though it wouldn't be funded through the utility tax when it gets repealed, it would be funded through Proposition P. So if that tax at 1% is something that not only pays for these services of paramedics and ambulance service, as well as allow the Visitor and Convention Bureau to pay its own way through the TOT tax rather than having it come out of the general fund, why is it that the city is against both measures?
Let's put that question up to our listeners and to our guests, and thank you, Steve Hartman, KSCO, Terror of the Airwaves.
And I'll see you, Robert Norse, on AM 1080 KSCO Wednesday at 12:15.
Yes, you will.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Claire.
Hey, thank you both.
Bye-bye.
So, phone lines are open for all of you supporters of our opponents of utility tax repeal, and here's a call coming in. You're on the free radio.
Hello there. Well, a few comments to make. Let's start with the positive. I'm glad that Steve agrees with the necessity for medical marijuana, although I'm sorry it's partially because he had to have his parents be very sick and need those sort of things to help them with their sickness. And let me say from there, there's a couple of statements I think need correction as far as Measure Q funding ambulance service or something like that. I hope people will read their ballots carefully. Measure Q funds the Visitors and Convention Bureau, or whatever its current name is, a private organization run with the exclusive goal of benefiting private industry, namely the tourist industry in Santa Cruz, which I don't understand how a...
Fred, let me interrupt you for just a moment, because one of our guests is about to leave.
Okay, yeah, get it.
And I want to say goodbye to Joe and thank him. And is there anything particular you want to ask Joe or say to Joe before he leaves? Okay, Joe, anything you want to conclude with?
Don't. We've got to keep the utility tax so we can find a better way of taxing the rich.
Thank you, Joe.
And one more thing. Mark Primack for Marty's seat.
Anything to get Primack out of the city, eh, Joe?
Exactly.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
An unusual approach to the election. Okay, go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Marty's been a very good friend of labor, and Mark, I don't think anyone will say has been, so I don't think that's the solution. As far as the utility tax, it's obvious that, you know, people such as Mr. Hartman are unhappy with the local government. I think he would agree with that. And it seems that they're wishing to punish the local government for not doing as they see that they should by taking away their money. That's legitimate, I guess. But let's look at the history of this utility tax. When it was a county issue, it was said that it was an illegal tax. It was passed against the law without the will of the people. The court said, no, that's not true. Then they said, well, this county has a $500 million slush fund. They don't really need this utility tax money. That may or may not have been true. No one's accusing the city of Santa Cruz of having a huge slush fund or anything even beyond a barely marginal rational reserve.
But the city or the county you're talking about?
City I'm talking about here. No one in this debate is accusing the city of having any great amount of money packed away to where they have more money than they need.
Because I know that the county does seem to have a huge amount of money packed away.
That's a different issue, but we're talking about the city. Now, I'm just referring to the fact that those were the number one, and then when number one failed, number two arguments against the utility tax in the county. So those two arguments have disappeared. They don't apply in the city. So therefore, the proponents of the utility tax repeal have lost just about all their arguments, and now all they can say is, well, these city people are doing stupid things, so we should take their money away from them. Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the city government is reflecting more or less the will of the majority of the people, and people feel like they want these services. Personally, when you add it up, look at your utility bill, 7%. I share the utility with three others.
it's about $200 a month. 7% of that is $14 a month. When you divide that up into 30 days, you're looking at less than 12 cents a person for utility tax. I mean, so what's the problem? For 12 cents a day, I would like to have a green belt around my town to prevent a couple hundred thousand people coming and crowding the streets, making the place unlivable. People are not being forced to leave town, as was mentioned earlier, because they're having to pay 12 cents a day utility tax. I don't think anybody's even being impacted to the point where they would notice it for paying 12 cents a day utility tax. So it's simply a vendetta by conservatives because they're unhappy with the fact that they cannot control the local government. Therefore, they're trying to punish them by taking away some of the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps Steve or some other conservative voices will call in to give you a retort to that. Any comments about the concerns of the SEIU that we were talking about earlier? I know we went through that briefly, but I think some new stuff came up after you left.
I'm sorry I missed most of that, Robert. I wasn't able to tune into that, and I just wanted to get my 2 cents in about this utility tax and about the fact that Measure Q is going to a private industry funding the tourist industry in Santa Cruz only.
Anything coming up at City Council? Claire, I think, has something she wants to say.
Well,
I think the public needs more
information
about where their tax dollar is going, how, you know, county gets their revenue, how the city gets their revenue, what happens to that revenue, and, again, be able to participate in choices that get made in the county, in our department. When, you know, county budgets came around, I know that they were asked to reduce their budget because of the repeal of that tax and a fear over money, but it's hard for me to believe there's much of a problem because I see, you know, people refining their properties and they're doing it at higher rates, and so that increases the tax revenue and property tax values. So the question is, you know, are they getting enough in property tax to support the local government where they maybe don't need the utility tax? I do think a lot of people are fed up with how, you know, their services, they want quality services out of public government, and most of the employees who want to give it to them so wholeheartedly. And we're just trying to deal with what we have to go through on a day-to-day basis to provide that.
Any other thoughts, Fred?
Well, yeah, I want to support what the woman just said as far as the workers in the county and the city, but we need to keep the city utility tax and the county utility tax separate. They're two separate jurisdictions. Their budgets are not connected in any way. Their funding is absolutely separate, and their expenditures are separate. So, you know, let's not punish the city of Santa Cruz for what the county of Santa Cruz may have done or not done.
I agree with that. I agree that both the budgets are different and the tax revenue bases are different, and they have to make different choices accordingly. And the best you can do is see what that information is, know it, and make decisions accordingly.
Except they're both the same bunch of hacks. That's the problem.
They are. Mm-hmm. Are you on Steve Hartman's side now?
If that's Steve Hartman's side, I'm on his side. I don't think so. I think he's on my side.
Okay, good. Let me make just one more comment about that.
I thought you thought they were a bunch of hacks, too.
Well, I've been pretty disappointed, and I just want to say that there are several issues that were raised by progressives in the last couple of elections that would help alleviate some of the budget crunch that we've been talking about and the need for other services that perhaps aren't able to be funded. And there was speculation tax, one, on property that people may buy and hold for a short period of time and then sell at an enormous profit. And also, we could require a higher number of affordable units to be built, or what's called an in-lieu fee when a developer doesn't build the required 15% on a project of affordable. They pay an in-lieu fee. I think in the city of Santa Cruz, it's $25,000. That fee was set in about 1979. It's hopelessly out of date. That fee needs to be raised to meet the current price level. Be a good source of revenue to help various programs, but particularly affordable housing.
Now, you've been seen hobnobbing with Aldo Giacchino. Has he picked up any of your proposals? Or
Aldo's an interesting guy. You know, he's coming from a conservative place, but I don't know if it's being in Santa Cruz that's affecting him, or if he's just sort of like a liberal thinker. But
or maybe he's just lying, like Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar were at the last election, and Porter and Riley.
I don't think anyone's intentionally lying, Robert. I think it's a combination of bureaucratic interference, obstruction in the city, and people just being worn down and sort of basically just giving up. It's just the load that's put on them. 400 pages agenda every 2 weeks, subcommittee meetings, answering your phone calls, emails. People wear down pretty soon. It's just like, well, whatever the staff says, we don't have the time to deal with it. We'll just have to rely on them.
Yeah, still, I think it went by lying, I guess, you know, technically it's telling an untruth that you know you're going to violate. I think what rather we were talking about making commitments that have no substance, and then those insubstantial commitments evaporating into the air.
Well, I think it's easy for politicians to make commitments when they're running for election, and much harder for them to fulfill them. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Have them submit their proposed budgets before you vote for them and see where their priorities are.
That's a good
idea. You know, action and appropriation, that's really where it's about.
Hey, well, Fred, anything else you want to add?
Oh, well, I'll just take over your whole show and use it as a propaganda piece here, Robert.
Well, hey.
I do want to say that Marty Wormhout has an excellent record as a supervisor, both on the labor level and environmental level. I was a union officer, unpaid position for a number of years. Marty was an employee of the Central Labor Council at one point and very enthusiastic for labor. And she's, you know, you can criticize anybody on any issue, but she's the best person we have probably ever had on this Board of Supervisors as far as labor issues, and she's probably one of the several best that we've had on environmental issues as well. So I don't know why anybody would want her not to be in office any longer.
Well, I could tell you how bad she's been on homeless issues, but that's already been done so many times, I could do it again. But let's raise that issue for the community as to is Marty in fact the best there is on the labor environmental, or that's done extremely well, or has she not? Anyway, that's.
Well, thanks for the platform, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Fred. And
carry on.
Hey, call back if you want.
Okay, take care.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the heart of the heartland, or perhaps the heart of the outland. I'm not sure where we're at. We have about 15 minutes left, and phone lines are open, 427-3772. Actually, here comes a call now. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I'm going to be quick.
Go ahead.
Oh, hold on. I was trying to turn my radio off. I just want to reply to both Steve Hartman and to Fred. Are you there?
Yes.
I think it's really not very, I don't even know how to say it. It's not very responsible to base things on your own expenses. Some people share utilities. That's great, but single-family households don't. After 9/11, many business people had a really hard time and still are for a long time. It almost wiped out my business because my business relies on people leaving town, traveling. We had one point we're going to have to decide which utility to let go. We needed the phone for our business. We needed, I was, as a just a single family with a very low utility bill, we are so conservative. I was still paying about $7 to $8 per utility. Now, that's only $28 a month, but that's also the price of one of my utilities. So had I not been paying that utility tax, I would not have had to consider having a utility turned off. So when you have a business and you have kids, what do you decide? Do you not need water? Do you not need gas? Do you not need PG&E? Do you not need your phone?
Claire,
I mean, what do you decide on?
Claire is nodding vigorously. Let's see what she says.
Oh, yeah. I live up in Lompico.
Hang on a second.
Steve Hartman talking about if people can't afford to live here, they should move. Well, you know, then I think Steve is pretty much going to have to bust his own damn tables at a restaurant. He's certainly, you know, going to have to do everything for himself. Because the very people that cannot afford to live here are the people that wait on his sorry butt. They are everywhere, and they're in the service job. And if they weren't here, the town would fall apart. There's a new book out called Nickel and Dimed. I suggest he read it. I suggest everyone read it and see what people give up of themselves to support the rich. I don't think anybody should have to leave where they want to leave. If they